Big show for you here today. Ray Garvin joins me for this week's edition of the Data Dump. Big show here ahead, man. And we got a ton of talking points, some real decisions that people are going to be out there struggling with in their fantasy football semifinal matchups. What to do with Rashee Rice with no Patrick Mahomes, Kenneth Gainwell's massive passing game role, and if it's sustainable, and which tight ends can you trust down the stretch? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Good to be back. Missed yesterday's show. Was indisposed with some issues, some illness issues. We'll leave it at that. But very happy to be here with my guy, Ray Garvin. Ray, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, happy to be back on this show, the Data Dump Show with you, Matt Harmon. It's going to be a great day. We're going to have some fun. I don't know why you're laughing. I don't know why you're laughing. Let me frame up. I don't know why you're laughing here, but I noticed you were not on your usual spot. So whatever was going on, I'm glad to see that you're better. You're recovered. You're here. And we've got a lot to discuss today here on the Data Dump Show, Matt.
Yeah, let's just be transparent here for a second. I would never miss a show during the season. I missed a lot of content yesterday. I would never do that. I love this job. I take this job very seriously, especially during fantasy football playoff season. For God's sakes, it kills me to miss a show. The only thing that kills me more than missing a show is that I food poisoned myself. Hopefully the people have noticed I'm trying to put on some muscle mass here, you know, in the final months of 2025. So, you know, I gotta eat a lot. Okay. And, you know, just may have left something a little bit too long in the fridge, and I paid the price for it.
We're glad you're here. We are glad you're here, Matt. You're here. We're glad you're here, baby.
That's all that matters, is that we're here, and we're here to talk some football. And as Ray said, it is the Data Dump Show. This is where we pivot, okay? We begin to look forward into Week 16, and these are your matchups that you need to win. These are the stats you need to know to be able to make those matchups matter and to get every decision right. So with that, let's get into it. Welcome to the Week 16 Data Dump.
Yes, science!
My calculations are correct. You're going to see some serious...
Just so many puns to be made here. But I'll tell you what has me feeling really good is our first two data points here, Ray, because they're actually going to go together. They're two quarterbacks who are playing each other this weekend. And more importantly, they had big performances in week 15. So you get us started. Who do you want to talk about here for your first data point?
Yeah, I got to talk about the golden one, Trevor Lawrence. I mean, good, great, doesn't even begin to describe how you feel if you had Trevor Lawrence and you played Trevor Lawrence on Sunday. 6 touchdowns on the ground, through the air, just the best possible outcome you can ask for a quarterback in fantasy football. But here's the thing, Matt, he's been really good since week 10, 21.2 fantasy points per game, QB2 during that time span. The only quarterback higher at scoring points is Josh Allen. He's number one in yards per attempt over the last month of the season. He's fourth in amongst quarterbacks in rushing yards during that since week 10 time span. And then he is tied with Tua Tagovailoa with the fewest quarterback hits since week 10 with 7. So everything is just, it's so glowingly, overwhelmingly positive in favor of Trevor Lawrence. The offense is humming. He's been good since week 10. Like, this is, he's not getting hit. He's free. He's clean. But unfortunately, he gets a brutal matchup. He gets Denver at Denver. And we know how good that team has been at home. Denver's defense, third best against the rush on the season, only 87 yards a game allowed to running backs on the ground. Now, the pass defense for Denver is beatable. And I know that throughout this time stretch since week 10, Patrick Surtain wasn't on the field for a little bit. But against the pass, they're 18th versus the pass, about 215 yards allowed per game, 23rd in receiving fantasy points allowed is this Denver Bronco defense. So the question really is, like, how much do you, what we saw on Sunday from Trevor Lawrence win over the last month plus of the season, and then what he's up against a Denver Broncos defense that's good. Offensively, they're getting it done. Like, what breaks, right? The immovable force, the what is it, the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. Like, how good do you feel and how much do you trust Trevor Lawrence down the stretch?
I obviously think it's important to note when we're talking about the Week 15 performance that was against a New York Jets defense that's just...
Yes.
It's been a disaster all season. They just fired Steve Wilks, who's been one and done at every stop for a while now. I always thought that was a little bit of a strange marriage between Aaron Glenn and Steve Wilks philosophically. They don't really do the same thing on defense. And for whatever reason, that defense just never came together. And it certainly is a big caveat into what he did last week. But you mentioned it. Like, this has been happening now for a while for Trevor Lawrence. And I think there's two things going on here. One is I just think it's a new offense and these guys are getting more comfortable in it. Right. There's more time on task. There's less like procedural errors before the snap. And it sure feels like Trevor Lawrence knows a lot about what he needs to do in this offense now versus at the beginning of the season. I also think doing since week 10 is instructive here because this is right when Jacoby Myers got to the team. And we've talked about this, that Myers was just that settling force for this offense. The guy who actually can play the F receiver position after Travis Hunter goes down, it allows him to put BTJ in a more comfortable outside only role where he's mostly running go routes. So I think that there is some stability here for what Lawrence is doing right now. It's always going to be weighed against what he was supposed to be in the league, but that almost just doesn't really matter to me anymore. Like, the question is just, can Trevor Lawrence be a good, solid starting NFL quarterback? And I think with that, I'm trending to more towards in the long run, yes. Now, for playing him in fantasy this week, it is a difficult matchup, right? That's going to be the tough part here. And I think one of the things that we have to sort of unlock here, Ray, is, like, Surtain, who does he cover in this game? You know, is he going to just stick on BTJ on the outside? Because BTJ is the guy who obviously can make those big plays on the perimeter, and Surtain usually ends up covering the perimeter guys, but we've even seen him, you know, track Brock Bowers around the field before. So does Surtain end up going on Myers? Because I think that would make the offense a little more up and down because he's been that steadying force. I think that's a big question that we have to figure out when talking about this matchup here.
Yeah, 100%, because the receiver that will be matched up against the other cornerback, Riley Moss, probably has an advantage there. Riley Moss just throwing against him has turned fruitful, whether the receiver catches the ball or he's flagged for pass interference. It is interesting to think about which one of the receivers Patrick Surtain may travel with, may be matched up against. Even though Myers is the one that seems to be growing the chemistry with Trevor Lawrence, a reliable target for him, we have seen Brian Thomas still have explosive plays down the field over the past couple of weeks. And it's not a surprise that everybody looked, at least last week, against the Jets, right? But you get Parker Washington back on the field. All three of the receivers were productive. Washington had 50 yards receiving in the game. Myers led them, you know, in receptions. It was Brian Thomas that scored the touchdown in that game. But as you see Trevor Lawrence's maturation, like, everybody's getting a little better. Bryn Strange wasn't invited to the party, but I do think that, you know, here's the thing. This is what people are going to be asking going into this week. How much do you trust one of these guys? And Matt, I think there's a story to be told about starting Brian Thomas Jr., Jacoby Myers, the both of them, along with Brenton Strange. Like, you might be in that spot where you're rolling out against this defense a running back in ETN, the quarterback in Trevor Lawrence, and 2 to 3 pass catchers, depending on if you have to start Brenton Strange or not. It's a big matchup with a very good offense. Like, this is such an interesting game from both sides of the ball. And we'll talk about it a little bit more with your first data point as well.
We asked the YouTube chat, if you're watching along live with us right now, do you trust Trevor Lawrence against Denver this week? Flat out, 76% said no.
They said no.
So the vast majority of people, and I will say, like, looking at my rankings right now, quarterback is tough this week. I was texting with Scott Pienowski about this earlier today, and shout out to Scott and Boone, of course, for holding it down for me on the show yesterday, but especially Scott stepping in there kind of last minute notice. And, you know, we were talking about just quarterback decisions this week, and some of the guys were weighing in starting lineups this week. Honestly, it gets pretty tough after like Josh Allen. Jalen Hurts is my second-ranked quarterback in Washington because that's such a great matchup. But obviously that Eagles offense certainly not been in the circle of trust all year long. But even, you know, Drake May is going against the Ravens. Dak Prescott going against the Chargers. You know, Joe Burrow puts up a dud last week. You think he's going to bounce back this week. But Matthew Stafford, Seattle, like that's a tough matchup. So some of the guys that we have relied on lately are not in the best spots. You know, obviously Lamar Jackson has been up and down of late. And these players like Bo Nix, who we're going to talk about, and Trevor Lawrence, who we are talking about, they're players that were huge last week, but then they're in these tough spots this week too. So the quarterback landscape in the fantasy football semifinal week here is really difficult. And I think Lawrence really crystallizes that because everything is trending up for him here. I even love the way that they used both running backs on the field together last week. Obviously, Travis Etienne was dynamic as a receiver, but some of that was, you know, Bashaul Tuten creating like some eye candy. Bashaul Tuten had a big play in the receiving game this past week as well. So it just feels like everything is coming together for this Liam Cohen offense and for Trevor Lawrence specifically. And yet going into this Denver Broncos matchup, I still kind of find him more as a, I don't know, I want to say like a high-end QB2 as opposed to a guy that I would set and forget as a top 10 play.
It's this is where you're at. You know, I've got people, some of my friends have been texting me, Matt, man, what do I do? I've got this player, but this situation looks bleak. I don't know what to think. We're going to talk about this throughout this show today. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say, like, you gotta play with who you're comfortable with, right? It's do you ride with the one that got you to the dance, or do you pivot and do you switch it up? You know, how will you feel if you sit Trevor Lawrence versus Denver and he has a big game and he's a top 10 quarterback on the week? Here's what I think the answer to that is, Matt. As long as he doesn't do what he did in week 15, which I don't think that he will, not yeah, versus right. this defense. I think we can go out on a limb and say he's not going to have 6 touchdowns. As long as it's not that level of a performance, I think you'll be okay. If he's just the QB9, as long as you didn't get a dud, I think you'll be okay fading what is a difficult matchup. But I will just say, if you are going to attack the Denver Broncos through the air, is a much more realistic of a shot and a chance than what's happened versus them on the ground. You cannot run on them right now.
Yeah, which is why I do think Etienne is a guy that's going to have to show up big as a receiver here in this one. Some of the guys that play in the slot, or Brenton Strange, will have to show up big here, because that's really where you want to get this Denver defense. Just last point on the Jaguars wide receivers here before we move on. Jakobi Meyers, since he's arrived at this team, so since week 10, leads the team in routes, leads the team in yards per out run. He's been the most productive, effective pass catcher for this team so far. He's only played in the slot on 30% of the time. So the more I think about it, if I'm Denver, and look, I mean, I don't know. Vance Joseph knows more about football than I do, but I would probably actually have Surtain track around Jakobi Meyers in this game, because Myers, he is a guy that's not just an interior player. He plays inside out, actually leans more outside than in of late. And because of that, I think if you can kind of cause some chaos with that position, then you're leaning into some more of the volatility outside. And like BTJ absolutely could get Riley Moss on a go route here or there. He could draw a big pass interference, but I think I trust Riley Moss in coverage. It's just some of the mistakes and the pass interference stuff that's been difficult for him. So that's sort of how I would view it if I was Vance Joseph and what I kind of expect to happen. But obviously I'm just guessing there.
Yeah. Listen, I think this game, and I think we're going to talk about it with your data point, it's an intriguing one, both sides of the coin, man. Like there are some real decisions that people are going to be thinking about this week. And as you alluded to, quarterback is rough this week. Mm-hmm. This week, quarterback is a tough position to really feel extremely confident in anybody, because it has not been the positional vantage from a fantasy scoring perspective as it has been in years past. Lamar Jackson's not going off. You're not getting that type of season from Hurts. It's no Burrow. It's no Mahomes. It's no Herbert. It's really Josh Allen at the head of the table. And after that, I'm not saying you're streaming every week, but there aren't those positional advantages this season in 2025 at that QB spot that it makes every damn week. Matt, people said I was a madman when I said J.J. McCarthy would be a top 5 quarterback on the week. That was my bold prediction. He didn't get to 5, but he was pretty damn close to 5. Good enough to where I'll gloat about it today, right? It's just, it's matchups. And how do you attack, and how is your roster built to withstand, pivot, or overcome those defensive matchups laid down the season?
Yeah, I think your boy Jerry Jones said it best. He had some quote, I think that it was either yesterday or late on Sunday. He's like, I don't really get it. These quarterbacks who seem, I'm paraphrasing, but these quarterbacks who are seemingly struggling coming into the game, then they come and have their best performance against us. I just don't really see that coming. I'm like, well, Ray Garvin saw it coming, so maybe you should ask him what's going on there. So I don't know. Maybe Jerry can get you a consulting fee and you can let him know that nothing that's going on that defense from a pass defense standpoint is working right now. Again, let's stick in the same game for my first talking point here. Bo Nix, monster game in week 15. And again, he is playing the Jacksonville Jaguars this week, so we're staying in the same game. And what was notable to me is he did a ton of damage against zone coverage, which is different for him. If you guys remember early on this season in the fantasy film room, Nate and I broke down these quarterbacks who had big splits between man and zone coverage. And Bo Nix was one of these guys who really struggled against zone coverage. It was better against man. Well, huge difference in this game, and I thought, like, on film you saw some differences as well. Weeks 1 to 14 against zone coverage, Bo Nix averaged 6.1 adjusted yards per attempt, 44% success rate. In week 15, 12.7 adjusted yards per attempt, more than double, and then a 57.6% success rate. And why I think this matters is, one, because of the matchup here this week. This is quietly another unstoppable force, immovable object type of matchup here. It's not quite as well known as that Denver Broncos defense, but Jacksonville has played good defense as well. Specifically, they play zone coverage at the fourth highest rate according to fantasy points data, and they have the third lowest points per drop back allowed. I think, you know, obviously we're all hyped up about what Liam Cohen's doing on offense, but I think what Anthony Campanelli, the defensive coordinator in Jacksonville, has done as kind of a complete unknown hire for them has been really undersold. I think that defense plays really well. They fly to the football. They close windows against zone coverage pretty quickly. So it'll be really interesting to track Bo Nix, who I think had, you can't call it a breakout game because he's an established starting quarterback, but really a game where he did some things in terms of throwing into tight windows against zone coverage over the middle of the field on these in-breaking routes that you don't always see him pull the trigger on those plays. He was doing it against a great Packers defense last week, and now he's got another matchup here against a solid stop unit and a good secondary that plays a lot of zone coverage in Jacksonville.
Matt, just if you can recall off the top, and this is, I'm just trying to recall, when was Nix's sort of breakout in this game or the eruption post-Micah injury, or was it kind of happening when you watched it back? Was it happening the whole time, or did it? I'm just curious, you know, if you remember that right off the top.
I think it was kind of from the beginning. I mean, again, as the stat we're showing on the screen here, and this is something I think I referenced on the recap show, 90% of his dropbacks came against zone coverage. He was 21 of 30 for 267 yards and 4 touchdowns. So it was all day he was beating that zone coverage and just consistently had answers.
At some point, when I woke up on Monday morning and I did my show bright and early on Monday morning, what I told the audience, Matt, at some point, people just got to give Bo Nix his credit. It may be unconventional. You may not like the style of ball that he plays. You may not think he's a particularly good quarterback. But at this point, like, not just the wins and losses and the success, right? The success of his team, but from a fan, like, he, even when stuff is bad, they're going to keep throwing the ball. He's their guy. Sean Payton has full trust in Bo Nix. You know how sometimes you see the offensive coordinator just reel it all the way back in? They're like, they don't even want him to throw the football, right? There's no trust there. Like, they're going to keep gunning it with Bo Nix. And then when in doubt, he can scramble and pick up yards with his legs. This is a tough matchup. You said quietly, I've been tracking Jacksonville's defense. This is a difficult opponent. This is a difficult defensive matchup. Both of these teams, you look at them since week 10, they're like back-to-back, 3-4 down the board defensively. Very, very solid defensive units. The same thing we've said about Trevor Lawrence, the same thing we said about T-Law, especially the way he's played over the last month plus the season, in this matchup, we can say the same thing about Bo Nix. We can, because this Jacksonville defense is legit. I think both of these quarterbacks, it wouldn't shock me, Matt, if at the end of the day on Sunday, we were like, God, both of those dudes stunk. Bo Nix and Trevor Lawrence were just the defenses. Yeah, that's it. They were both bad for you. And then we can also see both of them just go off because they have been playing that good. And I think Bo Nix, he's he's right there in play as well with Lawrence for me this week. I know it's tough, but, you know, I'm riding with the guys who got me here. Bo Nix is a monster. He is. He's a young stud at the position for fantasy football, whether you like him or hate him.
But these guys are QB7 and QB8 in points per game right now. I didn't realize how close they were on the season in terms of what they're like. 19.4 for Trevor Lawrence, 19.2 for Bo Nix. These guys are very much having similar seasons. 6 rushing touchdowns for Trevor Lawrence, 4 for Bo Nix, 23 passing touchdowns both of them have on the season. Lawrence has a few more interceptions, so very close. And it's funny because I think when you look at these two, your point about if you some people just don't like the style of play that Bo Nix has, and I'll be honest, like the way he quarterbacks isn't my favorite in the world or anything like that. And I've never even been necessarily a big Trevor Lawrence truther either, but I think that Lawrence is much more like aesthetically pleasing when things are going right. But to Bo Nix's credit, and the only thing I would disagree about what you said there is that I think at times Sean Payton has called this offense like he doesn't trust Bo Nix, and that's what's like driven me crazy about it. I think at times this offense has had like training wheels on it, and to me I'm like, Sean, if you trust Bo Nix like you say you trust Bo Nix, and you know he was clowning on the Vikings for trading up to get JJ McCarthy, he's really sold Bo Nix as this next great quarterback, it's like, why are the training wheels on this offense? And I think it's just decision making to me. I think Bo Nix at times he does have all the traits and all the tools. I think he does like the ball doesn't die on him or anything like that. I think he just plays frenetic and his mechanics get wonky. And when that happens, he doesn't have like Josh Allen physical tools in order to correct those mistakes.
Right.
So I think because this is a team that wants to run the ball well and wants to win with its defense, I think they have dialed things back on Nix right now. But then in this moment, I wonder if they're seeing more from him. And that's why we saw this eruption in this Packers game. I don't really know what the answer to that is, but it's at least worth interesting. Like it's interesting, worth tracking as we go into this game.
Yeah, Nix is, and you saw some of the graphics on the screen, joins Dan Marino as the only other quarterback to have 20 wins, 7,000 yards, and 50 damn touchdowns in their first two seasons. It's just, he's good. And he's at home in this one. He's at home. I don't know what the weather's like. I don't know what the weather's like in Denver, Colorado, but I lived there for a little bit. I didn't like it, Matt. I need to be in the warm weather. I need to be in the heat. They're going from Jacksonville. It looked like a day. Did you see the crowd in that game? I mean, they had shorts and t-shirts. It's a whole nother side of the planet. Florida is right. That's a whole different. It's not even a part of you. It's just Florida, right? Now you're going to damn Colorado. I just wonder how the Golden One and company are going to perform out there. I trust Bo Nix at home, even in a difficult matchup. I trust him.
I think I trust Bo Nix a little bit more than I trust Trevor Lawrence in this matchup. I think I'm with
fair.
You on that,
yes.
Especially just because it's at home. And I think the way that I don't think either one of them matches up well against the opposing defense, but because of that ability for Surtain to potentially take away Jacoby Myers, I think that's more problematic for Jacksonville's passing game than whatever we're going to see on the other side of it. So again, really interesting matchup between two of the best teams in the AFC, man. Like that's where this NFL season has us right now, that the Denver Broncos are the number one seed in the AFC, you know, potentially right now. Obviously nothing is settled. There's no division winners heading into week 16, which is pretty crazy. Like nothing is truly settled here, but the Broncos have the odds on favorite to be the number one team in the AFC, and the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to potentially win their division. So it's a crazy time in the NFL, man. And I've really been enjoying the season because of it.
I agree. It's fun, right? Like, honestly, it is fun. I know you saw the stat out there, the first time since 1998 that the playoffs won't include Mahomes, Peyton Manning, or Tom Brady. First time since 1998. Like, this is cool to see this. Let's have some fun down the stretch. Even though some of these damn decisions aren't fun, we can have some fun enjoying the parody that is the National Football League.
Yeah, once your fantasy team either wins the title or you get eliminated, then you can enjoy the parody of the NFL season once that stress is taken away from you. We're going to continue to keep having fun
so
on this
stressful.
Show as we break down more of those decisions you need to make here heading into week 16. We will do that right after this quick break. All right, we're back. We're continuing to run through decisions and stats you need to know heading into week 16. Ray, let's get to your second data point here.
Let's get to it, man. The tight end position, the onesies positions here down the playoff stretch. Everybody's going to start. Trey McBride, yes, lock him in. George Kittle, absolutely, mm-hmm. You lock him in. Kyle Pitts is in lock it in territory, all right? But I got three tight ends that I want to talk about. And see, to be fair, Matt, I switched some stuff up late, okay? So the producers has Pitts on the screen, but I'm going to talk about somebody else, and it wasn't him. It was me. Kyle Pitts, as I thought about it, Matt, I mean, he's locked and loaded starting. And if Drake London is out, like, there's no doubt. He's a no-brainer. Even though you're not going to count on three damn touchdowns a week, he's a no-brainer. I replaced him with Dalton Schultz. Dalton Schultz, Harold Fannin, and Colby Parkinson need to be in your lineups. Let's talk about it, okay?
Before we get to those three, can we just talk about the Kyle Pitts thing here real quick?
Bring it up. Thinking about him
as a circle of trust player is going to be jarring for people, but I think I have a statement and a question. The statement would be, as I kind of said on the show, like the solo recap show from Thursday night, this had been building to this big breakout for Kyle Pitts. Like, he had been a player that was leading the position in target share before this game on Thursday without Drake London. But my question to you then is, what if Drake London plays in this game? And the talk out of Atlanta is that they're hopeful that he does. Can those two guys succeed together?
I don't know. Probably okay. They can, but he's not going to succeed at the same level. And again, I know he's not going to get three touchdowns, but without London there, that was the only guy that Kirk Cousins trusted. He was just, it was him or Bijan Robinson. I think with the inclusion of London, Kyle Pitts is still involved, but I cannot confidently count on, or at least expect, 7, 8, 9 targets in a game. If London's out there, I think it does change the math a little bit, Matt.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. My thing is just where Pitts has been winning overlaps a lot with how Drake London wins. But if London comes back in this game, he's still somebody you're starting in fantasy. And there's a team where I desperately need him to come back, because otherwise the wide receiver core is just completely sunk. But he's probably not going to be 100% if he comes back. So that's another thing too, where they might continue to lean on Kyle Pitts here.
This one is tough. And I know, listen, I got London in some spots too. If we all want him in, but if he is out, I think it makes Kyle Pitts's ability to play, start, think about it. It makes it crystal clear, and you can expect him to get, you know, the bulk of the opportunity. So that's where I was thinking. You know, when I was doing this, I was like, I want London to play, but let me just prepare like he's not. If he plays, it changes. But if not, I think Parkinson, Harold Fannin, and Dalton Schultz, Matt. I'm looking at what those three tight ends in particular have done. And I don't know why I picked week 10. I wanted a little longer than a month. Like, what's happened kind of like the second half of the season. So in the 6-game sample size, Colby Parkinson, tight end 4, half PPR, 11.6. Harold Fannin, 9.3, tight end 8. Dalton Schultz, tight end 9, 9 points per game. When you look at targets per route run for tight ends across the board throughout this time period, Colby Parkinson's 27.5% target per route run, second amongst tight ends. Dalton Schultz, 8th, and Parkinson first, Fannin is second, and then Dalton Schultz is 8th targets per route run over that time period. Receptions, Fannin is top 5, Parkinson is 10th. Like, this is a real thing with Colby Parkinson in LA, at least this season. I'm not talking about what it's going to be a year or two from now. And then they compound that with the fact that Adams is going to probably miss this game. He's out. They've already said doesn't look good. They're already high usage of deploying 3 tight ends on the field. It's a tough matchup versus Seattle, but this is, if I were to expect anybody in this Rams team to get an uptick in usage, it would be the tight end spots. Harold Fannin, I know that the Cleveland Browns are not very good, but they've only got a guy that they trust to throw the ball to. And he can scheme, scam, and garbage time his way to a bunch of receptions and opportunities. He had 14 targets. Harold Fannin had 14 damn targets last week, 14 of them against the Bears on the road. And then Dalton Schultz, I'm just going to say it quietly, quietly, I know we want it to be Higgins right away. We want it to be Noel. It's Nico Collins and it's Dalton Schultz. It's Nico and it's Dalton. It's not Christian Kirk. It's not Jaden Higgins. It's not Jalen Noel. It's Nico Collins, Dalton Schultz, and quietly CJ Stroud, since coming back, quietly just stacking weeks, Matt. Stacking weeks. And you know who they get this week? Damn, Houston, Texas, they get the Raiders this week. Las Vegas, they get them. Nico, Schultz should all be in play. Parkinson needs to be in your lineup, and Harold Fannin Jr. needs to stay there. Trust them three tight ends down the stretch, and Kyle Pitts as well.
Yeah, we're going to put a pin in that CJ Stroud thing because I want to bring it back at the very end of the show and kind of talk about him, you know, potentially versus a quarterback that I think a lot of people are going to view higher in fantasy. But again, we'll come back to that. I love all three of these names. I have them ranked as top 10 tight ends this week. Harold Fannin, I have ranked the highest of these guys besides Kyle Pitts, because I do kind of agree that he is, if we're tiering tight end rankings, it's the top three guys. You know who they are. It's McBride, it's Kittle, it's Bowers. Then it's kind of Pitts in no man's land, depending on whether it's going to be London or not. And then it starts this next group of guys, which to me, Harold Fannin leads, because Harold Fannin, number one, is a stud. Like, he's awesome. He's so good. He's on pace to have one of the best rookie tight end seasons ever. And a lot of that is one because he's great. And the wide receiver room in Cleveland just stinks. I mean, it's Jerry Jeudy is up and down. He's the number one. You know, Cedric Tillman hasn't caught on. He has been banged up throughout the course of the season, always dealing with something. Isaiah Bond is out there flashing sometimes, making big mistakes at other times. It's like Harold Fannin and log out. And when Shedeur Sanders gets in trouble, you see him looking for Harold Fannin, as he should. Like Davis Maddock notes, we start on the screen right now. Harold Fannin and CeeDee Lamb have the same number of targets on the season. I know CeeDee Lamb has been banged up, but Harold Fannin has been a volume monster. He should only continue to be. I think he's in a really good spot this week. Obviously don't love the idea of Shedeur and those guys going against the Bills pass defense, but still, you would imagine when he gets in trouble, it's going to be Harold Fannin. Parkinson is really interesting because it's the Thursday night game. You mentioned we're probably not going to get Davante Adams here, and he's somebody that I think is maybe the most rando name of these three guys, but you brought up the stats about how he's been coming on lately. And I think, Ray, it's easy to say, you know, he's the guy who, when you look at the Rams tight end room, when they play all this 13 personnel, he's kind of the do-it-all guy. He can catch the ball, but he's also really a good blocker, whereas Davis Allen is more of a blocker. And then Terrence Ferguson is essentially like a deep threat for them in 13 personnel, like a space clearer, more of a receiver than anything else. So Parkinson's just on the field all the time without Tyler Higbee. Now Higbee's status obviously is worth mentioning here, whether he's going to be back at some point down the line. So that's worth noting. The other thing, Boone has been pointing this out on the show. If you look at Seattle from a fantasy, like adjusted fantasy points allowed, 4-for-4 has this really good metric where it's like schedule adjusted fantasy points allowed. This is what Seattle allows to every position. They're number three, like best, third best against quarterbacks, best against running backs, best against wide receivers, but 18th against tight ends. So if you get the Seahawks, you're typically going to get them through the tight end, which obviously Colby Parkinson's the favorite for that room right now in Los Angeles.
I mean, listen, I'm not going to toot my own horn, but damn it, I'm going to promote the company. I told y'all 2 weeks ago, bold prediction. I'm like, Colby Parkinson, this dude's due for a touchdown. I keep telling you, trust the Trinity. The usage, it's there, and it's been there over the last month plus of the season. Colby Parkinson, since week 10, his trusted ability inside this offense, number one in the NFL at the tight end position, 17.65% first down per route run rate. Colby Parkinson. I know it doesn't, it's not a common name, but you start to look at, I mean, he's 6'7". He's athletic enough. He's open. Matthew Stafford trusts him. It's in an offense that's going to score points. It's a team that's devoid one of their top pass catchers right now. And yeah, Terrence Ferguson has a role on this team, but it's how trusted Parkinson has been and how efficient he's been, despite the fact that he had two touchdowns this week. I think he's scored in 3-4 straight games right now for Colby Parkinson. So this is, again, there are probably some other tight end names out there that you're going to think about. Jake Ferguson, TJ Hockenson. We probably go down the list of tight ends that you're probably thinking about playing over Fannin, over a Colby Parkinson. I wouldn't do it. Or at least I'll say this. I'd strongly consider a pivot when you've got these kind of guys on the board. And I'm pretty sure he's on waivers in a lot of spots too.
Yeah, and just last note on Dalton Schultz, who I have ranked the lowest of this group, but still a top 10 tight end. Your points about him are so well taken. Since week 10, that same timeline that you threw out there, Nico Collins leads the way with an 88% route participation. Dalton Schultz is 83%. Nobody else on the team is higher than 60%. Like, he is the second pass catcher on this team. And his air yards per target is so low. It's sub 7.0. He's averaging 8.3 yards per catch. He's just like the checkdown guy. He's essentially the older, less exciting, way more boring version of Harold Fannin on a much better offense, though. Oh. Right? It's like, hey,
yes,
nothing's going on downfield. Like, I can't get it to number 12. All these rookies are kind of rotating with the veterans at wide receiver. Well, I'm in trouble here. I'm CJ Stroud. I'm under pressure. I'm just going to dump it off to Dalton Schultz and come what may.
Yeah, it's not really a true, like, F it down. Dalton Schultz is down there somewhere. It's like, no, he's right there in front of you. Just,
yeah.
just flick it and get it to him, right? Like, I'll flick it to him, right? But he's not down there somewhere.
No, he's right over there, you know, in the flat somewhere. So that's actually, but it's been really good for Houston's offense since they kind of upped his involvement, as boring as it is. Speaking of a player who's got some increase in involvement, let's talk about Kenneth Gainwell's massive passing game role for the Pittsburgh Steelers. These are your target per route run leaders on the season among players who have run 150 plus routes. These are the only ones north of 26%. You just let me know when I get to one of these things doesn't look like the other. Number one is Puka Nacua at 36.8%, Jaxon Smith-Njigba 33.5%, Amon-Ra St. Brown 31%, Drake London 30.9%, Jamar Chase 29.9%, Rashee Rice 29.5%, Kenneth Gainwell 28.1%, Davante Adams 27.8%, CeeDee Lamb 27%, and Garrett Wilson 26%. These are the only 10 players in the NFL over 26% targets per route.
Okay, CD, got you. Jamar, yep, yep. Yeah, okay, right. Garrett Wilson, yep. At the beginning of the season, that was good. That was good. Rashee Rice, he's only played a few games. Who? What? Gainwell.
I know.
Is this right? Are we sure?
This is correct.
Matt, did you double check these numbers? Wow.
I have double checked. I've triple checked.
He's good. I'm watching. You're watching. Y'all out there watching him or watching, like, Kenneth Gainwell, he looks like the guy coming out of Memphis. I'm like, oh, man, that's the guy I thought we were getting when he was coming out 5 years ago. He looks awesome. And you talked about it in the pre-show, Matt. We're talking about trust, quarterbacks and trust. Talk about the trust that you've seen Aaron Rodgers with Kenneth Gainwell, because he's got it.
Oh, my God. This is so obviously Rodgers' favorite player on the team. It's so, so, so obvious. Number one, you just, again, the involvement as the receiver here. And Rodgers has been very quick to check down, you know, and I get it, right? Like, you've got one wide receiver and then this group of, you know, it's a bunch of young guys he doesn't trust earlier. And now it's these vagabond veterans, like MVS is scoring touchdowns again. Adam Thielen, you know, Troy Aikman saying, well, he really showed up as a blocker tonight. I'm like, well, that's Adam Thielen at 35 years old on his third NFL team this calendar year. He's showing up as a blocker here. I mean, Alan Lazard got released by the Jets today. How is he not already on the Pittsburgh Steelers? Like, that's the state of their wide receiver room. But man, it's been obvious since I saw Aaron Rodgers say after the game, I can't believe we got this guy. I love playing with him. Okay, so this is the quote we're showing on the screen right now. Quote, I love playing with him. He's as smart as they come. I still cannot believe what we got him for. I told him a long time ago my goal was to get him paid. Well, I mean, shoot, wow. You're scamming him some targets to get him paid here. I said this to you in the pre-show. Jonnu Smith, when he scored that rushing touchdown, I saw Aaron Rodgers after that play, like, tapping Kenneth Gainwell on the head, you know, on the helmet, congratulating him. I don't know if this is true or not, but I was like, was Kenneth Gainwell even on the field for that play? I don't even know. I mean, maybe he was, but he wasn't the one scoring the rushing touchdown. That was Jonnu Smith, but he's like, Aaron Rodgers dapping up Kenneth Gainwell. This is his boy. This is so clearly his guy. And it's really making us money in fantasy football. Like, this, if you're in a PPR league, this guy scored like 19 points last week. I had him on one of my benches. Luckily it wouldn't have mattered. I still would have lost anyways, but if I had started him, it would have been a little closer, you know. This guy is crazy in terms of what he's doing as a receiver. And you mentioned it, like, he's not just catching and falling, he's getting first downs on his catches too.
Yeah, this is I'm looking at the screen right now. RB leading their team in receptions this season, Christian McCaffrey, Devon Achane, and Kenneth Gainwell. I'm not joking, man. I'm looking at some of the screen concepts that they put together last night that they were running. It looked like they were doing some of the same stuff that Devon Achane and Miami does with him in the screen game. I mean, they are doing some creative things and then just getting him the ball in space. This is a fantasy cheat code, because wherever you got Kenneth Gainwell, it is far below the value that he's giving you right now, whether that was waivers, whether that was the last round, last pick of your fantasy football drafts over the summer. He is far exceeding the production that you're getting from him right now, and nothing's going to change. I mean, Matt, I looked up. It was had been like the first or second quarter. I went and looked. He already had 5 catches, and I'm thinking like, wow, yeah, whatever I get on the ground is a bonus. Then he gives you, 70, 90 yards rushing on the ground. It's a cheat code, man. And no, I don't think he was on the field when Jonnu scored, because when the running back was in his stance, I saw the 1, and I was like, maybe I just don't see the 4. It's Gainwell. And then he scored, and I saw it was damn 81, and it was Jonnu Smith. So no, Gainwell, I don't care if he was on the field or not. He wasn't the one that got that damn toss where Aaron Rodgers was dapping him up. But he's been awesome, and he absolutely needs to be in your starting lineup. 100%, you need to start him.
Kenneth Gainwell has a first down on 19.1% of his routes. Puka Nacua is at 19.7%. I mean, that's like what he is really helping this team move the chains, man. It's been a huge role for an offense that needs weird, creative, random kind of answers in order to move the football. And Kenneth Gainwell has been it sounds disrespectful to say like a random answer, but yeah, people were not expecting Kenneth Gainwell. Like, remember Caleb Johnson? Remember him?
That's what people were expecting
this backfield to look like. And instead, it's been Kenneth Gainwell as this passing down guy for this team. So yeah, I'm looking at my rankings right now. He is certainly a player that I'm going to have in a game against the Detroit Lions where that's going to be an interesting game to talk about, an interesting game to preview. But he is certainly a player that I will have in my top 24 running backs in a game script where the Steelers are probably going to be trailing. You know, they're going to be behind. He's going to end up getting a lot of these check down passes here because Aaron Rodgers trusts him. So there's going to be some bigger names. You're going to look at the weekly rankings and be like, man, Kenneth Gainwell ahead of some of those guys. But it doesn't feel great. It's not going to come with a lot of rushing success necessarily, but he's making plays and he's trusted in a very critical way in this Aaron Rodgers offense. So definitely a player worth shining a light on. Ray, let's get to your third data point here. And this one is definitely going to be a big question for a lot of folks this week.
All right. I think we've been pretty positive so far this show, even through the Lawrence and Bo Nick stuff. We've been positive. Damn it, I'm mongering right now on my third data point. Rashee Rice, Matt Harmon, Rashee Rice. What do we do? What do we do with Rashee Rice now that Patrick Mahomes has torn his ACL and already had surgery? So that means he's probably starting rehab tomorrow. You've got Rashee Rice. He's been one of the best wide receivers for fantasy football since coming back from the suspension, and he draws an elite matchup. Elite matchup. Since week 10, Titans allow the second most PPR points to pass catchers, fifth most to the wide receiver position. They're allowing about 171 yards per game, receiving yards per game to the wide receiver position, 9.5 yards per play to wide receivers, which is, I always get confused how to say this. It's like the second worst or 31st in the NFL.
Yeah.
Not good. Right? Prime matchup here for Rashee Rice in the Kansas City Chiefs passing attack. But the quarterback is now Gardner Minshew. And the last time we saw him in a full-time role, 2024, he was 43rd in points per game, 9.6 points per game for Gardner Minshew across that season. And when targeting the slot wide receiver in particular in 2024, 31 slot wide receiver yards per game was 37th among quarterbacks with 5+ starts. Good completion percentage, 3rd in completion percentage when throwing to the slot position, but he only threw to the slot about 5 times per game, 34th over that season in attempts to slot wide receivers. The matchup is prime. They should be able to throw the ball on Tennessee. with Patrick Mahomes, I think this could be a very much a get right spot for your Kansas City Chiefs. Matt, what do you do, man? You know, we got Rashee Rice here, and we got comfortable enough with the situations in Minnesota to tell people that we confident you can't start Jefferson. We were comfortable enough with J.J. McCarthy's failures as a quarterback during that time period to not put Justin Jefferson in our lineups. Are we there already in a do-or-die situation with Rashee Rice now that Gardner Minshew's the quarterback?
So I'm not going to say that I'm 0% concerned about Rashee Rice, because I think that'd be a little bit disingenuous. You know, it's a backup quarterback. You just never know what you're going to get. But I'm pretty close to 0%, right? And I think there's a couple reasons why. And I think you bringing up Justin Jefferson, that's actually a really good kind of contrast here, because like Jefferson is a wide receiver. Rashee Rice is a wide receiver, but they don't play the game the same at all, right? I mean, in terms of where they're used, how they're deployed, you can show me their fantasy points, their overall volume stats. It doesn't matter. Like, they are deployed in such different ways. Jefferson is that downfield number one, mostly he does move around, but he's mostly an X receiver. Like, he's going to always draw the difficult matchups, the double coverage, all that stuff. Rashee Rice, because his role is so singular and so unique, and they manufacture so many touches for him underneath because he's so good against zone coverage and so good after the catch, he really can be insulated from some of those concerns. And one thing that really seals it for me, you remember the 2023 season with the Indianapolis Colts for Gardner Minshew. They were just running RPOs, RPOs, RPOs all day long with Gardner Minshew. And Michael Pittman in that 2023 season just ate on first read targets, because I think he was like seventh that year in first read target share, because that's what happens when you get RPOs. That number one read is going to just get pummeled. He's always going to get those quick layup targets. This year, Kansas City, according to Fantasy Points data, has had 51 pass attempts with RPOs this year. The second place team is Pittsburgh at 34. Like, they specialize in this stuff already. So even if Rashee Rice, I think you got to dock him a little bit, because it's, you know, Gardner Minshew taking over for Patrick Mahomes. I can't rank him outside of the wide receiver one range, even with Gardner Minshew under center. So I'm pretty close to like 0% concerned here.
Yeah, I feel you. You know, I mean, you're going to play.
It doesn't sound like you do.
Like, you're going to.
It doesn't sound like you feel me, but fair.
I think I am a little concerned, because they can't run the football. The offensive line is banged up, and now you're just like, this is just not good. It's not good. Gardner Minshew's not good. I don't give a damn if he's on Kansas City, if he's got Andy Reid or any of that. He's not good. The weaponry around them is not good. And, you know, defensively, I'll just be like, I dare you to beat us with Gardner Minshew. We're gonna wall this off, and I dare you to beat us with Minshew. I agree, though, of all the pass catchers, I've got the lowest level of concern for Rice, but Worthy, I'm not playing that game at all. There's no upside there. Kelce, this idea that Kelce and Rice are going to be elite in this matchup, I don't know. I do not know. They should be. Patrick Mahomes was number one in the NFL in scrambles, too, by a long shot. And look what happened to him, getting hit and banged up. I don't know what this offense looked like. I don't know if they ran RPOs because that was Mahomes, if that's what they really want to do. I don't trust Gardner Minshew. I love Rice. This has nothing to do with Rice. It has nothing to do with his role or his talent. The matchup is elite, so I would still play him. If this were any other opponent, I would be a little more hesitant. If it were anybody else, but this Titans passing defense is so porous, to just get it to him. He doesn't need to run corner routes. He's not running any deep posts. Just get him the ball and let him operate in space. Worthy, those other guys, like, I'm not messing with him. It's Rice for me. Kelce a little bit lower down the line. I'd play some other guys over Kelce. This just feels pretty deflating for Kansas City in general.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to argue with you that it's deflating seeing Gardner Minshew as the starting quarterback, as we're showing on the screen right now, instead of Patrick Mahomes. But I do think, just because of Rice's role, like, this offense can be bad. They could even be on... I'm not going to say they're going to be on upset alert because it's still the Tennessee Titans and, you know, they've got a laundry list of problems here, but they could certainly be disappointing in this matchup with a really banged up offensive line. And I still think Rashee Rice can come away with 8 catches in this game because he's going to get screens. He's going to get underneath stuff. So yeah, is he a top 5 receiver play for me this week? No. Is he still somebody you're starting still kind of in that top 12 yes. range? I do think he still belongs there. A guy who was in that top 12 range last week, and I'm wondering what we do with him this week. Much, much different situation where he has not been a set it, forget it player. That's DJ Moore. DJ Moore set season highs in yards per route run at 2.3. He had a season high 3 end zone targets last week, one of which was obviously that insane Caleb Williams throw, one of the throws of the season. And air yard share, 37.9% air yard share was his highest of the season. However, his 16.7% targets per route was only the 7th highest rate for him on the season. And he has been a guy who struggled to consistently get targets in this offense. And even that was the case this past week. And yet, Ray Garvin, Rome Odunze not practicing today with a foot injury. Luther Burden, ankle injury. He's not practicing. I think Rome, long shot for him to even play in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if Burden is out. So what do we do with DJ Moore, who's been one of the most disappointing players relative to ADP, just not been involved in this offense at all, but he's coming off this massive 2-touchdown game, more efficient on a per route basis than ever, and yet wasn't really highly targeted either. What do we do with DJ Moore in our lineups this week?
It was interesting watching that game because in that first quarter, he had one catch and it was the touchdown. And prior to that, it was like he wasn't on the, it almost felt like they subbed him in once they got to the goal line, like, all right, DJ, we got to play for you. You're going to run this deep across the end zone crosser and we're going to hit you, you know, for a touchdown, right? They're going to be in man. It seemed like they just brought him in for that play. And then he was nowhere to be found in that first quarter. Then he got some looks, got a look in the second quarter, a couple in the third. There's no consistent option in this offense, Matt. There isn't. It's some weeks he gets some targets and he scores, and then other weeks you get negative 4 yards in the receiving game from DJ Moore. I'm not encouraged by his participation on the field when he was out there. You know, I want to see him on the field involved more. And it felt like watching the game, the priority was like, let's get Luther Burden going. Let's try to get this young playmaker the ball. Let's give Colston Loveland some shots. What do you do with DJ Moore? Who did they play? Who did they got this week? Who did the Bears play this week?
Packers rematch. No Micah Parsons, though.
I mean, how did he... No Micah Parsons, that absolutely helps. I'm looking at, this was the damn game. He had one catch, negative 4 yards. I wouldn't bet on that again. I don't know, Matt. I guess for me, it would depend on what other options I have. I think he's in play. He's absolutely in play, even against the Green Bay defense, but this is a defense without Parsons. I think he's in play, but I'm not, where are you at with him?
Yeah, I think he's like still a very boom bust wide receiver 3. You know, Ben Johnson after that Packers game said he was surprised that he came away with the stat line that he had. You mentioned the one catch for negative yards. He said, because I felt like we had more drawn up for him than anybody else going into that game. And I was like, really? Because they never have anything drawn up for DJ. They never have anything. Like, I kind of get it. I mean, I just don't think he fits this offense. And I've said that kind of all year long. And I don't think that the absence of Odunze really changes that. Maybe the absence of Burden, they just got to throw him the football more. They got to get him going on some of those plays, because that's really somewhere where their skill sets overlap is in the run after catch game. And I think right now Burden just has way more juice than DJ Moore does. I mean, even if you just look at the first half of last week's game, 33% target share. It's a small sample. It's, you know, 2 quarters, but 33% target share for Luther Burden, 16.7% for DJ Moore. I think it's pretty clear where this is going. DJ Moore's not going to be on the team next year. Luther Burden's going to be one of the top 2 receivers alongside Odunze. But listen, next year's thing. Like, they got to win this football game to compete for the division, to continue to cement the playoff spot, all that stuff.
Matt, 14 minutes ago, Bears listed wide receivers Rome Odunze, and Luther Burden as non-participants in today's walkthrough practice. From Adam Schefter, 14 minutes ago. There it is right there on the screen. Okay, Harmon, they're out. No Odunze, no Burden, and they didn't list Cole Kmet, who also left that game with a knee injury. It might be DJ Moore season here versus Green Bay or Loveland or Zacchaeus. You brought this up, and now we got to deal with this. Like, they're out. Do you have more confidence in Moore from that wide receiver three boom bust to Trustin and versus Green Bay?
I think if Odunze being out doesn't matter to me. Like, we've already seen that that doesn't really affect DJ's role. But I think that Burden, if he is out, that would probably cause me to bump DJ Moore up from like wide receiver 35 or 37, something like that. That definition of where he's been this year, which is he's either going to give you a massive week or he's going to give you absolutely nothing. I might then bump him in my inside my top 30 receivers. But even then, I mean, you're going to run into some names that are just in better spots than he is against softer secondaries. And there's more like bankable, proven roles.
I hear you. I know it's a tough dichotomy that a lot of people are going to have to answer this week. And I want to throw this out there and get your quick take on this. Do you think that the fact that Odunze, and you know how this works, Matt, the fact that he was ruled out right before the game, that game plan was not created for him to miss?
Yeah.
Right? The game plan was prepared for Odunze to be on the field. So I just wonder, was some of DJ Moore's not being out there as much as, I mean, he was not supposed to be out there as much with Odunze and Burden on the field. I don't, that can go a multitude of ways, but if he was truly declared out right before the game, that game plan was messed up. Whatever the Bears' plan was, it was not what they practiced during the week.
No, that's a really good point. And that's why ultimately I think if we go this whole week and you don't see these two guys practice, like that certainly benefits DJ Moore, but I think it just only benefits him so much. Like, to me, I look at this Bears offense going against this Packers defense, and I expect them to just try to run the piss out of the ball, man. Like, how many rush attempts can we get to Monongai and Swift? I think that will be the goal of this game.
You know who it doesn't help, Matt? It hurts Caleb Williams. We keep talking about who's those guys being. It's not good for Caleb Williams to have his best players off of the field.
Yeah, definitely not good for Caleb Williams if you've been using him as a fantasy quarterback going into this game with so many of the pass catchers banged up here. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We come back, we're talking some rookie running backs on very different ends of the matchup spectrum this week. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. And as promised, we're talking about some rookie running backs here. Ray, give us your fourth data point of the week.
All right, I'm going to give you where we rank this player right here. This is a running back over the last month of the season, second in running back share, 93%. Number one in the NFL, 89% of the touches of his backfield, 79% of the snaps, his third overall in the NFL, 26 targets over the last month. That's first in the NFL over this time period for this running back. That is 30th in half PPR. 30th. Ugh. In half PPR, Ashton Jeanty. Matt Harmon, we are at the point now, okay? I'm not talking about his dynasty value. I understand the offensive line deficiencies of Las Vegas. I don't give a damn about any of that now. What I need to know is, do I play him or not? Do I play this running back that's being utilized so much in my fantasy football semifinal matchup? Like, if you somehow escaped last week, like, do you want to dance with fire this week when the Las Vegas Raiders are facing off against who? Where they're playing? The Houston Texans? Matt, honestly, because we are going to talk about two running backs, opposite ends of the spectrum. Do you have the courage, the guts, to tell fantasy managers right out here on the Data Dump Show you don't play him? He belongs on your bench. Or do you just say, you know what? I'm gonna have him. Here's the cop out. I'm gonna just have him as a low RB2. I'm gonna keep him inside that 24, but he's just gonna be a low end range. So you gotta play him. Or do you say no? Would you play Kenneth Gainwell over him? Straight up. Bar for bar, running back for running back. You running Kenneth Gainwell out there or Ashton Jeanty. That's where we're at right now, Matt Harmon. Are you playing Kamani Vidal over Ashton Jeanty this week? I'm not even starting high. I'm going low. Where are you at? Where do we rank Jeanty after another dud of a performance if you somehow survive week 15?
Oh, you're making me sick to my stomach all over again with some of these names here. I will say, I think Kamani Vidal is pushing it a little too far. But if you're in a full point PPR league, I could see the argument for playing freaking Kenneth Gainwell over Ashton Jeanty. The thing is here, people gave me a little bit of, and I think it was fair feedback, but some people gave me a little bit of a hard time for wanting to, like, pushing for Ashton Jeanty to go in the coping corner in our final episode. And I think I was probably being a little bit too hard on the Raiders. I think I was justifiably wanting somebody to pay for this Raiders season. So I think Jeanty being a disappointment. My one thing though was like, yeah, has he been horrible in fantasy all season? No. Has he been what you want him to be? No, but he hasn't been horrible. But part of Boone and I's, you know, contention about why he was, you know, maybe a coping corner candidate was that the schedule is so brutal down the stretch here. Like, he played the Chargers in week 13, week 14 he gets the Broncos, week 15 he got the Eagles, and then this matchup against the Texans, they're the hardest run defense of the group. Like, in terms of schedule adjusted fantasy points allowed to running backs, they're sixth best. Like, they're the best run defense he's going to face down the stretch here. Like, maybe if you play him and you survive, you can play him next week against the Giants. That might be the good matchup there. The big problem for him too is that he's just not getting the receiving work to really save his bacon either. From a targets per route run perspective and team target share perspective, he looks good. Week 14, he had a 27.3% target share in the Raiders offense. That amounted to 3 targets. I mean, in the first half. Like, that's what we're talking about here. There's not a lot of early down receiving work, but there's a lot of late down stuff. So late in games, you can get some, like, hey, 8 target games, 4 targets for that end of that Broncos game. 6 targets last week for the Eagles game. He got 7 receiving yards on those 6 targets. So it's just, I think it's getting worse before it's getting better for Ashton Jeanty here.
You said that I may be getting a little too dirty with Kamani Vidal. Like, we're a little too dirty down there. I'll tell you this right now. If somehow Woody Marks, who has become like, I mean, he is the new version of Deontay Johnson. He is going to get injured every game. He's getting hurt. Somehow he's getting hurt. We're not even going to start on Woody Marks. If he's out, I think you can make a real case that Jawar Jordan outscores Ashton Jeanty in the same damn game. Jawar Jordan will outscore Ashton Jeanty in the same game. This is one where if you survive this week, I'll play him versus New York. To your point, he hasn't been awful. He also has not been good, which means if he hasn't been that great, there might be other options out there that can help you advance if you just do it and you don't just accept the 8 points that you might get for another week with Ashton Jeanty. It's a difficult matchup. They've got no quarterback. The team looks like they've given up. This season is what it is, right? Like, the season it was not what we expected. And I don't think you have to force him in. Versus Houston, this is hard for Jonathan Taylor. Right? For legitimately proven running backs. And now he's so far behind the 8 ball. I think this is one where I would not have any hesitation telling fantasy managers to find another option. If he's all you got, great. But I even with all the rushing production and volume, I'm just not fooling with it in week 16.
I don't think I can either. It's just like, Jeanty, I think, can be a great player in time. And like you said, this is not about his dynasty value or any of that. It's just, this is what the offense has been this year, and there's truly no reason to think it's anything different in this very difficult matchup against a really good defense. He's RB16 in overall points on the season and half PPR, and like, I do think that's going to continue to tick down here and maybe even get surpassed here by the next guy that we're going to talk about. Where do we rank Travion Henderson after another eruption game? So Ashton Jeanty dud game last week. Treyvon Henderson, big game last week. So here are just some of the stats from his performance in this past week game. His 70% share of the running back rushes in week 15 was the second highest mark of the season in a game that Ramondre Stevenson was also active. The other one that was higher was the first game that Stevenson was back. But 29% of Treyvon Henderson's runs went for zero or negative yards. That was the third highest rate of the season. So it really is like Treyvon Henderson. Does he matter for fantasy when Ramondre Stevenson is in there? Does he break off a long run? Well, he did it twice against the Bills. One of them, he completely ran into the offensive line, reversed field, and him and Drake May are running down the damn field together, ripping off this long run, which incredible play by both of those young guys. But really tough matchup this week. Since week 8, the Ravens rank first in rushing EPA and fifth in rushing success rate allowed. So since week 8, their run defense has been really good. On the season, they're seventh in terms of schedule adjusted points allowed to the running back position. So Treyvon Henderson, little bit boom bust as a runner, but when he booms, it booms big, and like they need him to continue to do it because that's how they get big plays from that run game, is from him and him alone. What do we do with him in a difficult matchup this week, Ray Garvin?
It's a tough matchup. I think the one of the added bonuses to the confidence meter for Treyvon Henderson this week is that New England did not wrap anything up against the Buffalo Bills, right? They lost that game. They got to keep going all the way down the stretch, right? They've got to keep fighting. They've got to keep clawing. They got to keep battling. Baltimore's in it. You'll get the best from both of these teams. When it comes to Henderson in particular, he's not quite, at least to my untrained eye, he's not quite Jahmyr Gibbs level of juice, but he's like a notch below that. And when you have guys like this, all it takes is one, right? All it takes is one crease, one opening, and then boom, he's off to the races, and there's nobody on Baltimore's defense that can catch him. He was clearly the priority running back to get the. They did some different things in that game. They did a lot of two, him and Ramondre on the field at the same time. There were some wrinkles that I saw New England pull out in this game with both of those guys out there. And the most encouraging part about his performance, it wasn't the fact that he just had the 60-yard run and the 57-yard run. It was the fact that Ramondre Stevenson also looked really good. Like, he got the first couple of carries, and I think his first touch went for 15 yards. And I'm watching, I'm thinking, oh, here we go. It's a Ramondre game. They're just going to feed the hot hand. But despite how well he played, they still prioritized getting Treyvon Henderson the ball. Ramondre only finished. I had a prop out there. I think it was his over-under rush attempts, Matt, for Ramondre was 10.5. And I'm like, oh, yeah. He had like 13 before the bye. No doubt he's going to hit 10.5. That first drive, I'm like, oh, yeah, I got this. I look up, he has 6 damn carries in the game, right? And I get that Buffalo was coming back, but Henderson was on the field and a big focal point of this offense. So is it a difficult matchup? Absolutely. Just like you were saying with Rashee Rice, like, yeah, this is a tough matchup. And yes, he's going to get some negative yards or zero. But one big play, like, I'm playing Treyvon Henderson. Like, that would be the player, a decision that I would regret with every fiber in my body if I benched him and he had another one of those. They could flip the week. Like, he's the type of player that can flip a week, so I'm playing him.
Over 80 yards from scrimmage in every game since week 9, too. So it hasn't just been, oh, he's been boom bust or anything like that. He's actually been able to give you a safe floor. Oh, my God, this poll that we put on there. If you're watching on the screen, you can see what it is. 61% of the YouTube chat would rather start Jawar Jordan than Ashton Jenkins this week. So that's crazy. Ray, what's your scouting report on Jawar Jordan? I didn't even know this guy existed like a few weeks ago.
I'm not going to lie to you, man. I got nothing for you, Matt, but he looked explosive when I saw him last week. I'm like, hey,
I did
put a few claims in for Jawar. And I don't know. Listen, Woody's probably going to be out there. I don't know, man, but he's hurt every other play. So we were talking about him. There's Jawar Jordan right there, man. He looked good. He looked good.
He did.
They got to get a running back, Matt. They got to get a running back. They got to get a proper back next year. Maybe Mixon to be back. They got to get a proper back. But we may be looking, just, it's going to be my bold prediction. Jawar Jordan outscores Ashton Jeanty in your playoff semifinals.
I love to see it. Yeah, just back real quick on Treveyan Henderson, just how important this game is for the Patriots. If they lose this game to Baltimore and then the Bills beat the freaking Browns this week, they drop down to a 61% chance to win the division. This is clearly their most difficult matchup down the stretch because week 17, the Patriots get the Jets at home, and then week 18, they go on the road to face the Dolphins, who are talking about a quarterback change. And I know Tua has been, you know, unplayable of late. Like, the end of game stats for Tua could not be lying to you harder than what happened in that game on Monday night. But their backups are Zach Wilson and Quinn Ewers. So, I mean, I don't know if that's going to make it any better. That's where the Miami Dolphins are at this point. All right, let's move on. Let's get to your fifth data point of the week here, Ray.
Yeah, let's just have some fun and appreciate what's going on right now in the NFL with Trey McBride. Matt, this is honestly probably the most valuable player in fantasy football outside of Josh Allen. Let me just give you some historic numbers on Trey McBride, averaging almost 16.5 PPR points per game. This pace would be number two amongst tight end seasons since 2020, only behind Travis Kelce's 17.35 half PPR points in 2020. Trey McBride currently has run 586 routes. That's seventh among tight end seasons since 2020. Andrews, he leads the way with 623, so he's going to eclipse that. This season is Trey McBride. His 140 targets amongst tight ends since 2020, that's the eighth most targets targeted season. Andrews, number one with 153 in 2021, so he's going to surpass that with health. Receptions, 105. For Trey McBride, which is seventh amongst tight end seasons. Evan Engram, number one, with 114 back in 2020. Trey McBride owns the third highest tight end target share season since 2020, and only Darren Waller and Trey McBride from last season have topped a higher than 26% target share on an individual season over that time span. This tweet that's on the screen right now is ridiculous. Travis Kelce, who is the tight end two, is closer to David Njoku, who is the tight end 28, than he is to Trey McBride, tight end one. Let that sink in. This is a special, special season that we are getting out of Trey McBride right now that I don't think you can, I'm not banking on this to happen next year, but in this current season, his positional advantage over the field is astronomical. And if you have them, appreciate how historic this season is and what it may end up being at the end of the year. There's no wide receiver. There's no running back that has a win above replacement percentage above the next closest person like Trey McBride right now. I just wanted to come on here and just gush over how dominant he's been. And you can say it's because of this and it's because of that. But in order to have a special type of fantasy season like this, there've got to be a lot of things go right. They can't run the ball.
Sure.
They've got no running back. They've got, there's really one receiver that they throw to, and they're in the type of offense. Matt, the thing that I love about Arizona, I don't care if they get down 30-0 in the first quarter, they are not going to stop throwing the football. Until the clock strikes zero, they will chuck it. This is a special season by Trey McBride.
I saw Pat Thorman put out that when he was looking at his neutral pace stats, there were only 31 teams that showed up from this past week because the Arizona Cardinals were never in a neutral situation against the Houston Texans because I think they fumbled on a kickoff return and then the Texans went up 10-0. So that is officially not a neutral situation. And they were just like, they're in negative game script from the beginning of the freaking football game. And that's what it's been all season long. Just dropping back with Jacoby Brissett ever since he's been there. Like no way he's having the season with Kyler Murray as the quarterback, even beyond the fact that it's just they're always in this negative game script and they're dropping back over and over again. Just to put the final numbers behind it, Trey McBride has 219.6 fantasy points in half PPR scoring. Travis Kelce, you mentioned, has 145.3. Kyle Pitts is tight end three, which is crazy, at 140.2. That's a healthy gap, obviously, to number one. If you just stacked him up with wide receivers from an overall fantasy point standpoint, only Jackson Smith and Jigba, Puka Nacua, Amon-Ra St. Brown would be ahead of Trey McBride from an overall fantasy point standpoint. That's the type of season he's having. Truly special stuff. Even points per game. 15.7 points per game for Trey McBride. Tight end two is our guy Tucker Kraft at 12.7. That is even a healthy gap from him to everybody else. So,
yes,
excellent season for Trey McBride. All right, fifth and final data point from me here this week. Just want to quickly talk about the Bucs wide receiver usage in the first game with the whole crew back. Okay, so Chris Godwin ran a route. I was the only player to run a route on more than 70% of the dropbacks. He was out there for 95% of the routes. He led the way with a 52% slot rate as well. Mike Evans led the way with a 37.5% target share. Emeka Egbuka's 2.56 yards per route run was his highest since week 10. And his only second game over 1.5 since week 5. And Jalen McMillan's 17.5 air yards per target led the team. So I threw out a lot of stats here to kind of say this is a bit more of a rotation than I think you'd want, right? Other than Godwin being out there for all the snaps. Like Ibuka's coming off the field. Evans is coming off the field. McMillan is in and out. 50% route participation for him. None of the other wide receivers like Tez Johnson, 9 routes, Sterling Shepard, those guys weren't involved. The tight ends, obviously, without Kate Otten, that was even a rotation as well. You know, Payne Durham led the way with a 36% route participation among the tight ends, and it was Devin Culp who caught the touchdown of the group. All these dudes out there, and Devin Culp catches the touchdown, of course. But I think this did kind of slide everybody into the roles that they need to be in. Evans was the X, getting all those downfield looks. Jalen McMillan provided like a splash deep threat. Chris Godwin entrenched as the big slot. And then it was Emeka Egbuka as a flanker type, moving around a little bit more and was able to be more efficient in that role than we'd previously seen him as the X receiver. So I don't think any of these guys are necessarily, other than maybe Mike Evans against the Panthers, are wide receiver ones, like set and forget. But I think everybody's kind of back into a comfortable role. McMillan is too, like, he's a deeper play. He's not really in fantasy consideration necessarily. Yeah. But the other two guys, I think, are kind of wide receiver two, like maybe low end twos, maybe high end three types.
Yeah, it was, you know, watching the game, it's like the old man Mike Evans came back in and was riding a bike. I mean, he's open, he's winning at the top of the route, and that some
getting
of the
hurt.
Catches just nasty. Yeah, I mean, getting hurt. What I thought watching the game was this, and it is not any slight to Emeka Egbuka or Chris Godwin or Jalen McMillan, but even at his age, like, Mike Evans was the best receiver on the field. Like, he looked 100%. Like the best wide receiver for Tampa Bay. And I think just that stark reality that as good as Egbuka has been for us in fantasy, especially at the start of the year, and Matt, how good I think he'll be down the line. Like you said, it is a bit more of a rotation. And Jalen McMillan was one inch away from scoring a touchdown in that game. He looked good. It was good to see him back on the field. Like everything that we talked about in the last segment, everything that's gone right for Trey McBride down the stretch, like Emeka Egbuka had that at the beginning of the season. There was no Evans. There was no Godwin. There was no McMillan. Bucky Irving was out for a long period of time. But now that they've kind of gotten everyone back, they're all in play, right? They're all, you know, McMillan deeper, much deeper, kind of desperation flex option. But, I mean, you're playing Egbuka this week. You're absolutely playing him. This is a gettable matchup versus Carolina. You're playing Mike Evans, no doubt about it. And I do think you probably can play Chris Godwin in this one. With that, now, Baker still needs to play better. It was better
definitely
from Baker, but it still wasn't good from Baker Mayfield either. It was better, but it wasn't like the Baker that we expected to have, you know, going into the season.
Yeah, I think the Baker variable is the biggest one here because I like the roles for all of these guys. I agree. Evans is clearly the alpha in the room and is going to be a wide receiver one ranking for me this week. And then Godwin and Egbuka are kind of wide receiver three types. You can play them. You don't have to play them. But Baker just needs to play better. And like that's the long and short of it. They need to win this game against Carolina. Whoever wins these two games down the stretch, they'll win the NFC South, even though it appears that neither team wants to win that particular division right now. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, we'll share two personal dilemmas we are facing in our fantasy playoff matchups. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back in the last block of the show here. We share some simple questions here. What is the biggest dilemma that we face in our fantasy football playoff matchups? Our real teams here, Ray. We're putting our money where our mouth is. What are we really struggling with this week? What's your answer to the question here? What is your biggest dilemma in fantasy this week?
Yeah, this week I'm going back to an old well that I probably need to stay away from. But after back-to-back games of 3 touchdowns from 9, J.J. McCarthy, this matchup against the Giants, Harmon, I should be able to play my Jefferson. I should be able. Now I feel like a damn hypocrite. I've talked all this show about matchups and trusting the usage and look at all this. It's been rough for Jefferson. It's been an abysmal fantasy season. But do we have some confidence here? Is there some confidence brewing with 9, the quarterback, McCarthy from Minnesota? Jefferson should smash on the road. I think they're double-digit favorites right now on the road at New York. Harmon, I've got a dilemma. You see the projections on the screen? Jefferson should have caught a couple of touchdown passes in the game. It wasn't like he wasn't available to do it. He's got to catch the ball. He should have had at least a touchdown in that game. Like, this is a dilemma for, I want to play him versus the Giants. I want to, Matt. I want to do it.
Yeah, one got called back for a penalty too. You know, definitely could have looked better. It's just so rocky, right? I mean, he has these big games, does J.J. McCarthy. And I think McCarthy is salvaging himself as a guy that they can play in 2026, you know, can go in and be like, all right, let's see what he does in year two, you know, because it's starting to turn around a little bit. But for the rest of this season, him getting the ball to Justin Jefferson, that's still been a struggle here. So I don't know, man. I mean, shout out to anybody who made their fantasy semis with Justin Jefferson on their team. It can be done, but like I mean, you could play him, but how can you feel confident that it's going to go well? I'm looking at my wide receiver rankings this week. I will still have him as like a mid to low end wide receiver too. Like that's where the projections have been of late.
And let me correct myself. The screen that we record here on Yahoo was covering up a 0. They are not double digit favorites. That was the money line total that I was looking at. They are only 3-point favorites in this one well. That kind of dampens my spirits a little bit more. But it would have looked better because he did have a touchdown call back and then he dropped another couple of passes. That he's still getting the volume. They're throwing it to him, Matt. That's my dilemma personally, and it's probably going to go down to the wire what I do with Justin Jefferson this week.
All right, for my personal dilemma here, I am wondering, what do I do with Justin Herbert? I had a Justin Herbert team survive this past week, and I just don't feel real confident in where this Chargers offense is right now. I think that offensive line has just put an anchor on this team that they cannot get past. Like, he's going to project really well. I get it. I'm looking at the site where I play him. He's like, he's got 20 projected points. I just don't trust that he's going to get to that. I know it's against the Cowboys. The Cowboys have obviously made people look really good. J.J. McCarthy himself made him look really good last week. I totally understand that. But can I find a viable option off the waiver wire? Like a C.J. Stroud, who we talked about earlier. Like, I'm looking at C.J. Stroud on the waiver wire here and thinking, like, does he project better as a QB1 for me in this matchup against the Raiders than Justin Herbert against the Chargers? Which is a crazy thing to think that, like, I trust the Houston offensive line maybe more than the Chargers offensive line to get C.J. Stroud the opportunity to get the ball down the field. But that's kind of where my head is at right now.
Matt Harmon, I hear you. And I agree with you, brother. I really do. But I'm just telling you, one sad Cowboys fan to somebody who is not, Justin Herbert should get right here. There are some significant issues defensively right now. They don't even know if the defensive coordinator will be retained. If Justin Herbert lights him up, Eberflus is out. The secondary for Dallas is problematic. They don't really have a true consistent edge rusher for the Chargers to deal with. I hear you, and I feel you, because Herbert has not been good over the last month plus. If there were a spot for Ladd and QJ and Keenan Allen and Gadsden to have some fun, it's right here in AT&T Stadium. It's right here in AT&T Stadium. There are some serious defensive deficiencies in Dallas right now. So I know that's a dilemma you have. I'm just trying to ease your decision-making process a little bit, I wouldn't be as terrified about this Dallas. I would think about it. Stroud's a good option versus Vegas. I'm not going to argue that. But I think Herbert will find success versus Dallas.
Well, I might pick up Stroud or somebody else for week 17 if I survive this week anyways, because the Chargers got to turn around and then play the Texans in week 18 or week 17, excuse me. So, yeah, maybe I need to find something just for that. Ray Garvin, appreciate you, buddy. This was awesome. Good to be back in the saddle. Good to be back in the show, and especially good to talk ball with you, brother. Tell the people what you're working on this week and that they can check out to prepare for the semifinal matchups.
Content, content, content. I'm going to talk about some rookies for the fantasy football playoffs. We'll talk on a couple of rookies. I got bold predictions. Jawar Jordan outscored Ashton Jeanty. And then as always, man, I do a show bright and early, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the channel. Come check me out. We have a good time. Matt, it was a good one with you today, man. I enjoyed it. Another week down, and let's make it, man. Let's get through it.
No doubt. Let's make it. Make sure you check out all of Ray's content. Tomorrow, we will be back on this show. Nate Tice is going to join me for the Fantasy Film Room. And Joel Smith, of course, will be back for another edition of Buzz is Building. That's going to happen live right here, 5 p.m. Eastern on this YouTube channel. For now, I'm going to go back to laying down. But we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, we are out.